is building biology environmental consultant Larry Gust. Larry, welcome to the summit.
Thank you, Josh. It's pleasant to be here.
It's great to talk with you again. You and I first spoke, I think, in 2013 in LA, where we were screening an early edition of Take Back Your Power, and it was excellent to meet you then, and you've been doing really life-changing work for a lot of people and a lot of clients in your area on how they can make their homes safer. This is one of the main topics of discussion here in the community, in the summit. Larry, I'm so excited about this talk because you are going to identify the causes of EMF radiation like one by one, and then we're going to get into specific solutions, things that you do for your clients. And so I'm so excited about that. We're going to dive right in. And before we do so, I'm just going to share with the audience out there a little bit about your background. Larry Gust is the president of the board of directors of the Building Biology Institute. He is an electrical engineer and also has expertise as a past certified mold remediator. In addition to helping lead the organization, Larry is a certified building biology environmental consultant, as mentioned, and a certified electromagnetic radiation specialist through the Institute. Since 1996, Larry has been teaching classes for the Institute, and for 25 years before then, Larry was doing manufacturing, product development, and total quality management for Mobil Oil Corporation until he saw the light, right, Larry? So you've went from kind of doing some mid to upper level management work in Mobil Oil to really changing people's lives for the better. How many clients, how many people, families would you say you've worked with as a building biologist?
Josh, it's been 26 years. I mean, it's really difficult, 2,600, 2,000, okay. Something like that. But Atlanta, Georgia first, to San Diego second, and then Los Angeles, greater Los Angeles area now.
Excellent. Well, yeah, that's great. What is building biology?
Well, building biology was born in the post-war era in Germany when some people, they were architects, builders, environmental doctors, and noticed there was a degradation in health among people with post-World War II construction methods and materials. And they decided that they would need to study that. And what was born then was building biology, and it took if you think of all these different disciplines are kind of siloed and they don't talk. So building biology brings them together so we can take a look at all of the different aspects and come up with a more health supporting indoor environment. I mean, primarily we're looking at homes, but this certainly applies to businesses as well.
Okay. Now, would you agree that the main focus of a building biologist has become electromagnetic radiation? Is that correct?
Gosh, unfortunately, that's true, Josh. I mean, I have done the full gamut of building biology trade, which is mold, chemicals, dust, however, electromagnetic pollution represents the larger portion of my practice today because it's just so ubiquitous and so problematic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's dive in then to the sources. Tell us about the sources of electromagnetic radiation that we and us all were faced with in our homes.
Yeah, so let's do that. I call it man-made electromagnetic radiation because there is natural radiation coming from the cosmos and from the Earth, and we've grown up with that, and our bodies are used to dealing with that. But the man-made radiation, our bodies are not, and that takes the form of what I call power system radiation. That is what comes along with the electricity that you have put into your house and have run, to every wall and lights at the top of the room, and creating a cage of wires that surround you on the walls and the floors sometimes, and in the ceilings, and those create particular kinds of radiations, which we'll talk about as we get into that in more detail. And then that was really important 10, 15 years ago, and I've been at this, as I say, 26 years, and we made a lot of improvements in people's health when we took care of those things. But with the advent of wireless age, we have gotten radio frequency or high frequency or communications radiations have come into our environment from outside, and people have embraced the technology, and they have polluted their own environments with things that they buy and put into their houses that are actually making them sick, or will make them sick eventually. So those are the two areas. I might also, before we move on, Josh, add that with power system fields, you have magnetic fields, which generally come from wire errors or being too close to outside magnetic field sources, and electric fields, which come off the wires, and it happens because that's the way we wired our homes. We could have done it differently, but we didn't. And then, believe it or not, with the advent of all of the electronics that we have today, we have certain devices called nonlinear power supplies that create dirty electricity, is the popular term for that. We call it microsurge electrical pollution. The industry has used the term electromagnetic interference, or EMI, for a long time, but that whole thing, EMI is actually talking about how this dirty electricity can interfere with the operation of devices, not so much as how it can interfere with the operation of people.
Mm. Okay, so there's power system fields. So the electromagnetic radiation that's associated with the power systems in our home, the wiring and the magnetic field that sort of emanates from the wiring, and the dirty electricity or dirty power is a component of that. And then there is the wireless, the radio frequency.
That's right.
Okay, so can you talk about the radio frequency sources and that side of the equation?
Yes, I mean, so those have become the big gorilla in the room, and you have to think about where it's coming from. So there's a typical cell phone system, principally comprised of the third generation system, or 3G, the fourth generation system, or 4G, and then the rollout of the fifth generation system, or called 5G, which is a topic of conversation in this entire get together. So that's outside. So you can't do anything about outside except shield against that. And I think we'll talk about that a bit later.
And also take action and do, you know, talk to your government and get together. But yes, you're talking about, so we're talking about mitigation. I heard somebody's question out there. You can't do anything about it. I heard that. So we're talking about mitigation within the home. So yes, please continue. Yeah.
I mean, just to amplify what you said, I mean, we need to go to the state level and get the state to object to the fact that our freedom locally has been taken away, and together the states, who've got the resources and the lawyers to fight with the federal government, then we can get something done to all those laws that have been enacted, you know, back in 92, and then the extensions of those that allow the government to tell local people what they can and can't do. So that's an aside from what I'm here to talk about today, but it's vitally important that people get off their duffs and go and do something active in their communities, because it's all forming up now.
Yeah, how concerned are you about 5G rollouts?
I'm very concerned about 5G. I'm concerned because hidden in the wrappings of that so-called 5G is this belatedly discovered factors that they're putting 4G antennas on the poles with 5G antennas, and there's some difference between 4G and 5G. You know, 5G doesn't run unless there's demand for the service for some sort of data-heavy thing like a videotape. But 4G is like we got right now. It runs all the time, but now it's going to be outside your house by your bedroom window, and this is a tremendous downside to what's being proposed here.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, there's two main categories, the power system-related electromagnetic radiation and the wireless. Let's talk about specifics now. On the power system side, we know that smart meters, advanced metering infrastructure, whatever you want to call them, digital meters, contribute to an increased level of dirty electricity, the voltage transients you talked about.
I mean, that's kind of on the cusp between outside sources and inside sources, because it's hanging on your house as well as your neighbor's house, and the RF, high frequency RF transmissions from those devices are a significant issue, especially if they're right opposite, you know, your windows from your neighbors. There's a certain amount of that RF transmission that's going out from the meter that gets on the wiring and comes into your house on the wiring. And as you mentioned a second ago, there is a dirty electricity component associated with those meters because there's a nonlinear power supply inside the meter to be able to make the electronics work so they can do what they've been intended to do. However, I will say that taken with all the rest of their electricity sources that exist in your neighbor's houses and in the typical house that most people have today, the contribution by the meter isn't particularly large, and we've had a very difficult time like finding the dirty electricity, which is a much lower frequency signal on house wiring because of all the other hash and dirt that's already there. But the radio frequency signal is something else, again, which was never on your wiring until we put these meters in.
Yeah, and the radio frequency energy, it seems to use the wiring in the house as an antenna, so it goes throughout the house with every pulse that meter does. Have you found that?
Well, it does go on the wiring. I don't know that they purposely use it as an antenna.
No, not for a functional perspective, but just as a side effect, yeah.
RF will get on any kind of metal. It'll get on your wiring, get on your pipes, your water pipes, gets on your heating ducts. It just follows every potential path around the house.
Okay, so we're talking smart meters. Now, what do you recommend people do about if they have a smart meter on their house, and what strategies do you help them with regards to that?
Well, here in California, you can opt out, and that was a hard-won right that was brought about by a citizens group that fought our Public Utility Commission until they caved in and allowed an opt-out. That's true in other areas of the country, but some states or localities don't have that, and it's another fight you have to take to your Public Utilities Commission to give you the right to have that meter removed from your house. I mean, that's the first step. You could move the meter potentially depending on your property status and distances and all and who pay for it to have it moved off your house to a post away from your house, and you shield that post from your house so that the radiations from the meter are not coming toward your house. I've done that in one particular case in Florida, so that's the way to deal with it. There are some, there's some filtration since the there's some filtration mechanisms that we could look at for the dirty electricity component that you put on the entire electrical system. We'll talk about that in a while. That would deal with the so-called dirty electricity coming from the meter. It's a lot more difficult to be filtering out radiation that's out at 1 gigahertz. Or 2.4 gigahertz that these meters would be using. Either they're going to be transmitting on their local area network back to the power company, or they're going to be talking with your appliances in the house, and those appliances are going to be reporting back what they're doing, and that information is going to go from the appliance to the meter. We didn't hit on that, but that's another, it's an internal source you could have in your house with modern appliances, which is like having them for a Wi-Fi transmitter in your refrigerator, in your washer, in your dryer, and you have to work hard to determine if what you're buying has that, because most people in the sales trade don't know what you're talking about. The salesman you would deal with or the saleswoman you deal with at the store, you'll have to do your own research to figure out if you can get something that does not have that in it. The push is to make everything like that so the power company can like turn off your air conditioner if there's a power consumption peak, or they can turn off your service if they don't like you or if you're not paying your bill without anybody having to come out to your house. So that's the that kind of covers the outside sources from the cell phone system. We didn't talk about if you're very close, like we are in California, it's only 10 feet to my neighbor's house. What if they've got a nice, powerful Wi-Fi sitting in the wall of their house right next to my house? So that's another external source that could be an issue. Cordless telephone that they might have would be an issue. People now like their cordless phones. They can get them and walk out their front door or down the block a couple hundred feet and still get reception. So these have grown more powerful over the years in order to provide that kind of performance.
What are your thoughts on, before we get into the specific radio frequency devices within the home, the other area I want to ask you about, what are your thoughts on like compact fluorescent lights and just fluorescent lights in general and anything other, any other culprits related to the power system itself and the appliances?
Yes, well, there are some things that you have in your house, like I do with my computer. My computer has a power supply that creates their electricity or this micro-surge electrical pollution, and you really can't do without it. But I don't need to have a compact fluorescent light bulbs all over the house. I've removed those, and there's no need for me to have LEDs that have power supplies in them, because now we've moved to LEDs that don't have power supplies in them. They're just running straight off of 120 volts, and therefore they do not bake this dirt. And you can go back to regular regulation incandescent light bulbs as well, which are still available on the market. I've kind of stocked up in a couple of sizes myself. The reason for that is because of the light spectrum of CFLs and LEDs is not really conducive to good eye health unless you're paying for an LED, and there are some out there that has been made with a full spectrum where the reds aren't missing and they've toned down the blues, which can be, you know, which can be create oxidation in the eye. So that's not really electromagnetic radiation of what you would typically think of, but it's something you really don't want to have in your house, a bunch of light that's injuring your health over the long term.
Something I appreciate about this subject, it's so multi-layered. There's so many aspects of our life and various types of technology that we really need to start thinking about safety and mitigating. That's why the work that you're doing is so valuable. So, okay, so everything with a power supply contributes to dirty power. We'll get into some specific mitigations for that in the solution section later on in this conversation. Now let's focus on other sources of electromagnetic radiation in the house, which we haven't talked about yet.
And they are manifold. I mean, frankly, Josh, you almost need to buy yourself a low-cost RF meter.
Right. We recommend these Cornette ones. I know that there's an Acoustimeter. There's Safe Living Technologies has a little meter. There's
Safe and Sound meter, yeah.
Safe and Sound. Gigahertz Solutions if you want a larger device. But absolutely, I totally agree with you. But please continue.
Yeah, and I think most folks out there would probably be better off with a meter that has some LEDs on it that shows you ranges as opposed to dealing with a bunch of numbers. But that way you can always find that next device that you bring home that actually didn't know it, but it's pulsing and putting out RF. But going back to your question about what's inside the house, the things that are inside your house are growing. It used to be it was your wireless router and the computers that connect to the wireless router, because it's a two-way street. You know, you got the emissions from your laptop, your desktop going to the router, and you got the emissions from the router coming back to your laptop, your desktop. What's the worst? Well, you're sitting right in front of your laptop or desktop, the radiation level there, 10, 20, 30,000 microwatts, and substantial radiation. If you got that printer, if you got that router sitting right on your desk, which most people have got it right in their office, right? New routers, 100,000 microwatts, or maybe 200,000 microwatts, you know, on top of what you're getting from your computer. So you have a very, very high level of power density in the office.
Microwatts per meter squared, right?
Microwatts per meter squared.
Okay, so and your building biology guidelines will say that 1,000. So you mentioned 100,000. It could be 100,000. Could be 200,000 from a router if it's right there.
1,000 is considered more. That's considered to be extreme.
Yeah, that's the threshold for extreme concern.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I mean, no concern is less than 1/10 of a microwatt. Well, that's not really possible in most areas today. I'm kind of dealing with wanting to get people down to 10. Microwatts per square meter.
Excellent. So, and on the Cornette, for those people that have one, it's 1.000. That's the translation for 1,000 microwatts. And Larry talked about the lower levels as well as really what you want to get down to. But so, Wi-Fi routers, what else? And Wi-Fi computers, what else?
Wi-Fi, and then the other thing that almost everybody has in their office is a cordless telephone in the base stations in their office. The one that's the part that plugs into the telephone company incoming signal at a wall outlet. or I guess you say a wall port, and that is always emitting for most of these. If you, even when you hang it up and aren't using it, it's still putting out that signal that you could walk out your front door and go down the block and still have a connection. So those signals have been going up, 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 and up. So then you add that to the 100,000 from the router, to the 10,000 from your computer, 30,000 from your computer. You've got you're working on nearly a half a million microwatts in your office, which is a ridiculously high levels of that. So those are the principal things that we've had for quite a while in the home, for 10 years anyway. Then we've added to that all of our new entertainment systems, which have got smart TVs, which are pulsing. You listen to them and they're blipping all the time. You've got cable TV, the black boxes associated with a cable TV. They're becoming, instead of being the control for your cable box being through infrared, which is light, it's now RF. And the receiver that you have is always transmitting a beacon signal to make sure that the device you're holding in your hand can find it. And those, they're a couple thousand, 3,000, 4,000 microwatts right there when you're sitting in your sofa. Apple TV and Roku, they emit pulses, even though the Apple TV is, you can plug it in, hardwire to the internet, it's still emitting pulses. Even though you have it plugged in. The Apple TV 5 and newer use RF to communicate with the handheld device and the Apple TV black box itself. I recommend that people wrap those Apple TV boxes in aluminum foil. It does drastically cut the signal down, but it still comes out with the wires in the back of the Apple TV, but it cuts it down a lot. You can still communicate with your handheld remote, but you reduce the pulsing when you're sitting out there watching the TV. And then when you're done watching TV, turn the power off on the Apple TV. In fact, I would put a power strip on everything for your entertainment center and flip that off when you're done being entertained. So anything that's pulsing is no longer powered and goes away.
Mm-hmm. Good. What else other than the office, which, do you want to touch on like anything else in the office, the peripherals, the printer, the mice, keyboard? How critical is that?
That's a really good point, Josh, because most printers have wireless function, and that's another Wi-Fi going in. They're surprisingly strong because you want to be able to print from all over the house, right? So you got to communicate all over the house. It's just like a router, right? You got to communicate with that all over the house. So most of those printers, you can turn off the wireless function, but you can't always trust it. You turn it off, and it doesn't work. Function, but the signal is still there. I've run into a few printers like that. And then there's everybody's got wireless keyboard, wireless mouse. So those are what they call Bluetooth, and they're made to, they work at like 30 inches is the signal, just the distance that the signal is good for. But it's very strong. It's another 3,000-4,000 microwatts, and not to mention that, it's in your hand. I mean, that signal is going right through your hand. I mean, this is not zero with a cord on it, but it's a whole lot worse when you have a cordless mouse, and then of course the cordless keyboard has got a Wi-Fi or a Bluetooth signal coming out of it as well.
To what extent do you think the wireless keyboard and mouse contribute to like sore hands or carpal tunnel syndrome?
Well, I think they contribute a lot.
and there's a lot of science to back that up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've got clients who, once that went away, along with other things, depending on how sensitive they were, like reducing electric fields from all the wires around your workspace, that really made a big difference in how they felt. I mean, headaches, mental fogginess. For some people, it was, since they were had to work on this. This was their job. It was like a godsend for them to be able to get rid of this. You can still buy corded mice, corded keyboard. At the risk of your own health, you really don't need these things. It works perfectly fine the old way.
What are your thoughts on, as long as we're talking about the office here, what are your thoughts on blue blockers?
Well, I think that's a good idea. Or you get yourself like Iris, which is an app you put on your laptop, which changes the color rendition, makes it less effect on your eyes. I've got one of those on my iPhone, which I keep on airplane mode most of the time, except when I'm out. Trying to avoid radiation as much as I can. I mean, I see what it's doing to people. I'm my clients, and I don't want to be in that same boat myself someday. But the blue blockers, watching TV before you go to bed, the blue blockers are a good idea, particularly if you find there's a correlation between watching TV and not getting sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So.
Yeah. Because of the effect on your melatonin levels, because of the blue light that's coming from the screen.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. For me, that was critical. It's one of the keys for me to sleep better and increase my energy level. So okay. So we basically covered the office and the entertainment center, right, Larry?
That's right.
Okay.
And the entertainment center and the smart meter, the other pulse thing on the side of your house. And we didn't really mention gas meters and water meters, which are also going the smart meter route. And there's a lot of different variations of the systems that they're using. But generally, depending on what your utility decided to do, they're not sending information on a very frequent basis that electric meters are doing, and they don't have beacon signals that let surrounding meters know that they're there, ready to send or receive data. One thing we might point out, Josh, is that as far as these electric meters are concerned, there are collector meters that they don't tell you if you have a collector meter on the side of your house, and that might be a meter that collects signals from all the surrounding meters in other houses and then retransmits it because the other houses are not close enough to the collection point, the cell tower, to make that work. So then you end up with much, much more in terms of the level of radiation that's being put out by your meter.
Yes, it's obviously criminal. And so for those of you who haven't seen it yet, my movie Take Back Your Power, which exposes the smart meter situation, is free on YouTube. If you can find it, it's been shadow banned on YouTube. Go figure. So Larry, what's your thoughts on other devices, such as in other rooms we might have wireless phones with other base stations, we might have baby monitors, right?
Well, baby monitors are a child abuse, because most people are doing video baby monitors, and they have put a Wi-Fi transmitter right above the baby's crib, which is incredibly strong for the little teeny thing that's just a couple of pounds. It's just a criminal thing to be doing. You could still do that through a hardwired system. You go to techwellness.com, which is a website specializing in helping people do things that they can do themselves. They feature the system that you can use, and you can run the signal over your power wiring if you don't happen to have Ethernet wiring in the house, and you can get that doggone radiator antenna out of your child's room. And if you're going to hardwire your house for your own health, I mean, what good are you to the baby if you're sick or dead? So, and you gotta be healthy for that baby for 20 years, right? So you need to be thinking, parents need to be thinking about their own health, and not just tomorrow, but down the road a long, long way. So they ought to be hardwiring their house, and then a baby monitor that's wireless doesn't work. So got to get hardwired there too. There's a lot of help out there for people today, Josh. If they start searching, they'll find all the help they need.
On your website, gustenviro.com is a fantastic source and for information.
Yeah, and there are links to other people's websites there as well for information. Yeah.
Okay. So and then we touched on wireless or decked phones, like the landline wireless phones. So what kind of, for those of us who still have landlines, what kind of phones should we have?
Well, you want wired phones, cordless phones. You put that cordless phone up to your ear, and it's going right through your brain.
And then the base station on many of these DECT phones is always transmitting. That's something that surprised me when I learned about it.
Isn't that the truth? Always transmitting so that those satellite phones know that there's something there to hook up to. And the satellite phones don't transmit unless you're on it. I mean, so... I mean, that's sort of like a small advantage, because when you're on it, this is going through your head. It's not a good idea, because it's just sort of like the baby brother to your cell phone. We know that there's brain, tumors and so many things associated with exposing your head to that.
So do you want to touch on, before we get into solutions specifically, do you want to touch on the wearables like Fitbits, Apple Watch? What's your thoughts on these?
Anything that is going to take information without a wire someplace else is no good for you. I mean, you see Fitbits, I mean, people who put those on have a rash growing up and down their arm from the Fitbit. It's putting out a pulse, and your arm is one of the pulse points for your own body, your body wiring system, your subtle energy system, and then you strap this radiating thing right over that chakra. It doesn't make a lot of sense from that standpoint at all, and there's certainly been enough negative reaction to it. You need to avoid all devices that send data without a wire, because it's got to be going through the air, and it will be going through you at the same time, and your children, and your wife, anybody that's around you.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, we're just finishing on the other parts in the home now. Be really mindful, as you said, that you're not getting a smart, quote, smart refrigerator. You're not having different appliances throughout the house having, wireless capabilities. And so it's really up to us to do that due diligence, isn't it, Larry?
It is, because we didn't mention this earlier, Josh, but the pulsing that is... the part and parcel of digital wireless communications, 30 years ago, they knew that that was extraordinarily more biologically active than are the electric fields and the magnetic fields from power systems. And everything is working on a digital basis, and so you're getting all this pulsing all the time. So it's incredibly important to become responsible for your health and get rid of these things from your environment. It may be inconvenient, but it's going to be worth it in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Well, yeah, I like how, we've already begun the discussion of solutions, because that's the biggest piece for a lot of people is, what can I do? Before we dive into that next part, what symptoms have you noticed, both in your clients and before they got their houses cleaned up, and in the scientific literature, what symptoms are caused by electromagnetic radiation, just as a recap?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we're going to be thinking about electromagnetic radiation symptomology. It overlaps in terms of, is it power system electric fields? Is it power system magnetic fields? There's RF. These are all kind of like in a grab basket, and then different people grab different symptoms and display them in their body. And there is this sort of like the electrical disease where your eyes turn yellow like jaundice. So you got to keep that in mind. So everybody might not be experiencing this laundry list, but there's like difficulty concentrating. Good thing to have in schools, right? When you're trying to teach students.
Right, Wi-Fi in schools, Wi-Fi laptops. Right. That is a huge issue that if you haven't seen the movie Generation Zapped, please
exactly.
Do and share that with parents, principals, school board.
Exactly. Fatigue, sleep disruption, irritability, headache, depression. We see so many teens depressed. They sleep with their phones. They've got cordless stuff in their rooms. They've got wireless connections because they want to, float around the house with no cord. Irritability, I said that. Digestive system upset. Nausea, dizziness. Appetite loss, muscle spasms, numbness and tingling. If you got your fingers on that wireless keyboard, you're liable to experience that sort of thing in your hands. Tinnitus, ringing in the ears. I can't tell you the number of clients I got who just got their smart meter and all of a sudden they had ringing in their ears. They were fine with their Wi-Fi, but the very sharp, high energy pulses in the smart meters, and those seem to throw a lot of people like over the edge for reactivity. Then there's lightheadedness. So, you know, those are some of the symptoms people experience with, you know, with this. And,
yeah. So what have you noticed in terms of your clients? You said you worked with over 2,000 in 26 years. That's amazing how many lives you've touched already. In terms of your clients, what types of symptomology improvements have you seen? If you want to give us a few examples.
Oh, the very widespread is the inability to sleep.
People can sleep better.
Yeah, so people who get up multiple times a night, they can't get to sleep. They got heart palpitations that wake them up at night. I cannot tell you the number of people who have had those symptoms go away within the first night that we turned off all the energy in the bedroom, or within, you know, a reasonable period of time, let's say up to a couple of weeks, depending on how, you know, badly abused their body was before they started this process. And so, you know, depression going away, as I mentioned, headaches all the time. Once those smart meters got put in, a lot of people had headaches all the time, and irritability and inability to think, inability to make decisions. I mean, many people are probably familiar with multiple chemical sensitivity, where people are sensitive to perfumes and they get brain fog and things of that nature. Well, these symptoms seem to be copies of the ones from a chemical allergy. There's electrical allergy, and it's much the same, you know. Then there's the research side of it, you know, showing connection between cancers and Alzheimer's and Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's. You know, there's a lot of brain function issues associated with RF radiation that's getting into the brain. And here we can talk about the work of Martin Paul from the University of Washington. Are you covering that elsewhere?
Yes, Martin's in the summit. A very powerful conversation. So,
yeah, he's kind of wrapped it all together. And why are these things happening? Lots of great mechanisms explaining why these either do happen because they've been studied and shown to happen, or why they could happen, you know, based on the body chemistry. Very good to play, you know, be paying attention to.
Okay, Larry, so what else, what other types of symptoms? You mentioned your clients see improvement typically in the areas of sleep and the areas of less heart palpitation, depression seeming to, you know, lift. What else?
Yeah, well, absolutely. All the things you just mentioned, heart palpitations and allergy response and muscle cramping. And getting up to go to the bathroom, you know, seven times a night. All of those things decrease when you clean up the field environment or the electromagnetic radiation environment. And I was mentioning the ADHD and the autism spectrum. One of the things that they think about autism is that the kids have a lot of chemicals in their bodies that part of the treatment regime is to chelate and, you know, do things to get them to dump those heavy metals and so forth in their bodies. I mean, I've seen instances where the dumping was, they did all of the requisite things. They could not get these things out of their bodies. It was an autistic boy in one case and a normal girl. Both of them had been tested prior to my being there, and then we found high magnetic fields in the bedrooms and RF from the router that was below the kid's bedroom. And of course, the electric fields, which are in everybody's bedroom. And when we turned those off, they started dumping heavy metals like crazy. There's an interaction between all of these things we're seeing in our environment, chemicals, electromagnetic radiation, the things we put in our bodies and can't get rid of, which are causing, you know, changes the way we function, including how the brain of these children function.
Wow. Yeah. So basically, the symptoms that you're talking about, Larry, isn't it interesting how pretty much all of these are listed in a 1970 U.S. Naval Research Report that has 2,300 studies, I believe. It's referenced in my film. And those are all these symptoms are listed as what happens with microwave exposure. So it's not like Larry's just making a claim and you know, not able to back this up with science. The science is there. So let's dive into the solutions, Larry.
Just one more thing, Josh. Please, I mean, yeah. I understand there's about 10,000 studies confirming that man-made electromagnetic radiations of varying frequencies have an effect on health. Started with the Navy studies of radar, the results of radar communications radiations, and the findings haven't changed after 50 years of research. They're the same.
Yeah.
Okay, so solutions.
Yeah, we could get into that and into the politics and like, why, how is this happening? But, you know, other talks are helping us kind of process yeah. that. So solutions, okay, so the first area of solutions, the power system fields, the magnetic, the electric, and including dirty electricity. What can people do there?
Exactly. So magnetic fields. Magnetic fields come from wiring errors being too close to appliances that have high magnetic fields. So the wiring errors are kind of, you can buy a Gauss meter, which measures magnetic fields. You can monitor your house and you can discover areas that are high in magnetic fields. And if you can turn off the power in your house, like turn off the main breaker and they go away, that means you've got wiring errors, right? If you turn it off and the fields change but don't go away totally, you probably have parallel and neutral paths bringing current into your house by the water pipes and the cable TV connection, which got nothing to do with your own wiring. So there's, you know, there's either or both in that particular case. And then you need to be aware of the fact if you sleep on the other side of a wall from a kitchen, you got a refrigerator running there, you could have high magnetic fields in the bedroom, in that bed, if you're close to that refrigerator. So you got to be aware of your sources and then reorient the way the furniture is sitting in the room to address that, because distance is your friend with magnetic fields that come from point sources like the TV, like the air conditioning system, the fan motor and air conditioning, like the refrigerator motor, freezer motor. So they use lots of electricity and generate very intense local magnetic fields. There's electric fields. Electric fields, in most houses today, you have plastic jacketed wiring in the walls. A few places like Chicago, New York, they have metal conduit for the wires that are in, or they have flexible conduit that the wires are in. Those places have low electric fields from the walls, but 99% of the place houses have high electric fields. And the easiest solution is find the circuits that are causing that problem in your sleeping rooms and then turn those off at night. Generally, you don't need electricity at night. I mean, maybe you need it for the air conditioning or you need it for the refrigerator. You may have to rewire a couple of circuits to keep those running when you turn these circuits off. There are very inexpensive body voltage test kits you can use to figure this out for yourself by, you know, measuring body voltage with the person in bed and then turning circuit breakers on, you know, all the breakers off and then turning them on one at a time and finding which ones affect the bedrooms and, you know, labeling those, and then you can make a map for every bedroom in your house.
What are your thoughts about lamps or radio clocks that kind of plug in, but especially the kind that don't have a grounding plug? Does that do anything?
Well, you're thinking of the plug that has three prongs on it. The electric field from a wire that has three wires in it, a hot, a ground, and a neutral. Lower electric fields come from that, but not significantly lower to solve the problem. I mean, we're looking to be at less than 0.3 volts per meter. The typical sleeping situation is 10 to 30 volts per meter. You're way, 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 way too high. And the only way to resolve it is to shut those circuits off. I mean, if you unplug the lamps, you will get some correction, but you still got what's coming from the wiring that's buried in the wall that you can't affect. Now, you know, you could shield the bedroom with a particular kind of paint, which is getting to be kind of complicated, but if you put that paint on the wall, you ground the paint outside to a stake in the ground, you'll stop electric fields, and that paint also stops RF. And so for some people, they may want to want to shield their bedroom for RF, and you can get a double bang for the buck in that particular situation. then you have to be careful about what you've got plugged in, because all of those cords to your lamp, to your clock radio, even to your charger for your phone, they all put off electric fields that have not been trapped, and you have to take action to either unplug them, put them on little switches or things of that nature to complete the remediation.
Yeah, okay, good. Now, what about dirty electricity?
So dirty electricity is caused by internal sources, your electronics, your complex fluorescence, your older LEDs. You could get rid of all of your LEDs and compact fluorescence, track lighting that has those MR16 bulbs in it that are running at 12 volts. Those create horrid amounts of noise in that. I can confirm that from earlier tests in my house. But you don't need them. You can get other ways of lighting with newer fangled LEDs that don't have transformers, 120-volt MR16 bulbs, which are available, and you know there are fixtures for. Once you eliminate all those sources in your house, you're left with your computer. There are some relatively inexpensive devices you can plug in at your computer to work on that, and then you're left with all the dirt that your neighbors are making and local industry and office buildings, and that's riding all over the electric lines and coming into your house. And
so how do you filter, or what do you do to mitigate DE?
You need a whole house filter device that takes care of removing the stuff on your two hot wires and your neutral wire.
Mm-hmm.
And those are available. There's a couple of different brands. I guess we're not going to get into, those. Are we going to get into the brands here that you might look at?
Yeah, if you like. I mean, one of them is we are interviewing, as part of the summit, Terry Stotine, and I highly recommend everyone check out his, he's a dirty electricity expert, and he has a technology called SignTamer.
Right.
Shown to be pretty significantly beneficial. What do you recommend? What other technologies do you like?
Well, I've been using the SADC filter, which is another filter that's sold into industry to control your voltage spikes and power factor. They built some of those units that are adapted to houses. I guess you would maybe want to look on the internet to see if you can find some comparative performance measurements between these different devices that are out there, and make up your own mind then which one you would like to put on your house. I don't know what the sign tamer is looking at, but the sensor filters are running around $1,400 plus installation for one that's for the whole house.
Oh, you mean the SADC? You said Stetzer.
I meant SADC filters.
Okay. And then what's your thoughts on the Stetzer filters, the Greenway filters, and the different brands that plug into an outlet without doing the whole home?
Well, they do some good. They have a 30-cent capacitor in them. Which is what they're doing, that taming of the reducing of the voltage peaks, which represent the dirty electricity. Many of more expensive. I mean, it isn't like those are $30. We just talked about something that's $1,400. It's got a lot more stuff on the inside, and how it goes about taking care of the microsurface electric pollution that's riding on your lines is different than the less expensive one. So, you get what you pay for. These more expensive filters do other things, like they prevent your computer from blowing up when you have voltage surges that come in by way of the power line, lightning strikes, problems on the power line. And they do a power factor correction, which could save you some money. There's various manufacturers make various claims about what on average you might be expecting to save. You're not going to save your entire electric bill. It's some fraction of that, but they do that. So they have three things going on for them. They get rid of microsurge electrical pollution. They get rid of it. I got to be careful here. They considerably reduce it. For a lot of people, that's enough. They clamp voltage spikes so they don't ruin your all your electronic equipment, and they have some effect on your power factor. So you got a lower cost for running the refrigerator, the AC, your heating system, fan.
Yeah, from Terry in that interview, one of the things he says is he doesn't lead with this, but his customers typically experience a 10 to 30%, sometimes more, decrease in their electric utility yeah. bill just from cleaning up the power that's being used, you know, or that's running through the wires in your home to make it usable power. So you're not paying for the transients or the spikes anymore, right?
It's pretty cool because you can get the benefit we've been talking about while you save some money on your electrical bill, and you can pay for the cost of this installation over the years. It isn't like a zero-sum game here. So that's a beautiful outcome.
Yeah, good. Okay, let's switch now for this last segment of this interview. We're kind of running out of time, but let's see how much mitigation solution strategies, specifically for radio frequencies, specifically for wireless in the home, Larry. What can you tell us?
Okay, so the first and number one thing is get rid of everything in your house that's wireless. And that means you have to have a wired Ethernet system. That can be done by putting in hard wires, calling in a low voltage, you know, communications company to run those, or there are Ethernet over power line where you can inject the Ethernet signal onto your power lines. This may be not good for people who are very, very sensitive to electric fields, but for most of us, because it's such a small signal, it probably is okay. But if you were going to be slice and dice this finely, you want to go for actual dedicated Ethernet wiring for people who are really, really sensitive. So you can run those all over your home. You get up, 40 of these Ethernet over power line things all going to separate computers, all on your wiring and not getting mixed up. So that's the thing to do. You can also, there's similar devices for putting these signals on your cable TV lines, which many houses have running all over them these days. So there are solutions there. You should get rid of your cordless phones and go to corded telephones. You can get just regular AT&T service where they have their own wire running out of your house, or you can go with voice over internet protocol where your voice signal rides on your cable line or on your AT&T fiber optics line. Those are all good. You can call forward your cell phone to your landline. You can go to your computer and do your text on your computer, and you can turn your iPhone or your Android phone on occasionally to see what's happening.
And you can wire your phone, right? There's like Ethernet adapters now on online or in
you can, and it works flawlessly with iPhone 10. It's a bit of a problem below that.
So with regards to cell phones and the adapters for Ethernets, they are getting better. I have an iPhone 6, and I actually have to use two adapters still, but it works quite well, especially for just internet connectivity. And I also want to ask you, with regards to the whole house wired Ethernet solutions, there's also a technology called MoCA 2, which uses the in-house TV cabling system. What can you tell us about MoCA 2?
Exactly, that was what I was attempting to get out a few minutes ago. Exactly, so MoCA, the nice thing about that is that it does keep it off the electrical wiring. There may be less interference issues in some houses. I have one locally where you just can't get a signal very far because they've got something in the nature of a higher frequency signal that's coming into their house, and it messes up. Well, the cable TV wires would probably address that if they had them to every room. And I think every house since the 80s had that done. So that's an excellent way to go at it. Yeah, MoCA.
Yeah, and for people that have a wireless router and they connect to it via Ethernet, but they still won't turn off the wireless. Dr. Klinghart was telling me about this company called Little Tree Group. I think littletreegroup.com, and they make these bags with the blocking, RF blocking fabric that enclose the wireless router in the bag.
Well, that's certainly good. It's like wrapping your Apple TV. that we were talking about earlier. But you, all the wires that come out the back are like little antennas, and that signal goes out them. So the best thing you can do, if you can't do anything else, do this with the bag, or wrap it in foil for that matter, or you can get RF cloth yourself. You can buy it online from various places.
Well, let's talk about that RF cloth, both for the home and for clothing. What can you tell us about the fabric, fabrics and mitigation?
Well, you have to look at what, you know, what they propose or what they show for their specifications as what frequencies they block and how much of those frequencies are blocked. I mean, there's fabric, Swiss Shield makes a fabric, quite a lot of them. There's one called Swiss Shield Wear, which is meant to be incorporated into wearables. There are, Swiss Shield Naturel, which is a woven like muslin, very fine wires, very close together. That probably has the greatest performance of all. I think the thing that I would, the general fundamental principle I would put out there for people is that wires that are woven together have holes in them. The holes that are between the wires allow RF to get through. As the RF goes up in frequency, the waves get smaller and smaller, so those holes have to be smaller and smaller to be effective. So right now, there's some question that existing fabrics will be useful for 5G type radiations, which we haven't gotten to, because they're looking to use at least early 5G up to like 6 gigahertz signals, and they would go through much of what we have today, which has only been tested up to about 2.5 or 3 gigahertz. So my preference is metal, because metal has blocks everything, so aluminum foil, but you can't put aluminum foil over your windows, so you want maybe curtains that block it. And so there's various choices. Daylight is another a type of fabric from Swiss Shield. It looks like window screen. It's a little bit finer than window screen, but it's got more bigger holes, so there its effectiveness is not as good. Even for lower frequencies, it's good at 20 dB. So how strong is the signal? If you got a 10,000 microwatt signal and you've got 1% left coming in, that's probably too high yet for many people. You got to know what you got outside that you're trying to block on the inside before you can make good decisions about what products to buy to do that job.
Okay. Good point. Now, what are you a fan of the EMF shielding clothing? Do you need to,
I have had many clients who claim they couldn't travel without it. And every client has got a different response to that. I mean, there's hoodies available out there on the market that are lined with this. And some people, claim that they can't function without those. I've had clients who have made lines like a sleeping bag, and when they get in the airplane, they zip themselves up in this thing, and they have a look. The face area is like that Swiss Shield cloth you can see out of. It isn't quite as good, but the rest of the bag is very high reduction, and they can travel very comfortably. They've had to decide to look foolish, but they can travel and they don't get sick. So there's lots you can do with that clothing.
And the style of it is improving over time.
So I mean, you have to get it, try it, and see what it do for you. I had an airline pilot who had been sensitized from, I missed a lot of emissions in a cockpit of an airplane, and he was so sensitive he could feel the pool pump turn on next door. He had like a scarf of multiple layers of something like Naturel, and it was a godsend for him.
Well, okay.
Headaches.
Yeah. Two areas left. One is, what are your thoughts on for people who really, want to mitigate at nighttime, who perhaps really have a hard time sleeping? What are your thoughts on the full canopy, full bed covering canopies?
Well, number one, I think the first place you start is your sleeping period time. You have a couple of choices. You can paint the walls with RF shielding paint. And make sure the windows don't transmit. They would have to be low-E glass, or you have to put film on the windows. For those of you, the people who can't do that, there are apartments, there are these RF tents, I call them, and they can be made out of daylight fabric, which isn't good as good as the natural, which is like muslin fabric. One allows ventilation easier than the other one, so it's all about being, how sensitive are you, how low do you have to go, and how much, you know, can you, if you, when people who need it say, well, I don't mind the lack of ventilation, at least I can sleep, I don't even notice it when I'm sleeping. But how big is the signal? I mean, there are some places where you need to paint the walls and get an RF tent to get the numbers down enough for the people who are really sensitive. So it just depends on your circumstances.
And you mentioned that, my last question was, you know, you touched on it just now, painting your walls with reflective paint. Any tips there, any brands that you like, and does it have to be grounded?
Well, I would stick with a brand that meets the military specification, sold to the military, and there's a specification that they say the military, the mil spec they're buying and under. There's been some amount of variability in other brands. I mean, I've used for years Y-Shield, made in Germany for the German military. Very successful. Grounding is not necessary to get rid of RF. RF is being reflected, not conducted away. It's like 97 or 8 or 9% reflectance and just a little teeny amount of absorption on that paint, and some transmittance. I mean, it's 99.994, 99.2 layers, 99.997% effective. You paint it on, you paint over it with three layers of paint because it's black. You know, you have to cover the black up, and if you're trying to go to white, you have to use quite a number of layers of, three layers of color paint to get away from the black. You have to decide how good a job you're going to do. If you've got wood window frames, or you've got fiberglass window frames, or PVC window frames, the RF comes right through those. You could paint them. You know, go to the ends of the earth, you would paint the frames, and you have to use special paint for PVC so the RF paint doesn't peel off, so there's a primer. So you can do that, and then there's window film you could put on that passes up about 80% of the daylight and blocks, you know, 99.99 something, I don't have the figures in front of my head here, but of RF. So, or you, if you've got low E glass, which most windows since the 90s do, that does a pretty good job. We talked about getting a meter. If you have your own meter, then you can check these things out in your house, so you can make reasonable decisions about what to do.
Yeah, excellent. Any other final thoughts in terms of tips or strategies or perspectives for our viewers?
No, I mean, the only thing I would say, Josh, is I have seen so many lives ruined by becoming so sensitive that people can't function. And we're trying to, you know, the horse is out of the barn, and we're trying to put the barricade up at the door. This is affecting everybody, whether you're symptomatic or not. Martin Paul will tell you about that in his presentation. It's happening to you right now if you're in a place with high levels of RF. And it's doing things in your body. You may not feel them, but they're happening. You know, Martin Blank, who unfortunately passed away, has got that appeal online for all these scientists that signed on to this appeal to the United Nations. He tells you about what the cells are signaling and how the people who study these sorts of things have told you what the cells are signaling. They're saying they're in distress. We need to take action to clean up our environment. And it starts with the sleeping environment. Josh.
Yeah. Well, this is such a big topic. There's so much value here. We just got in that huge download, Larry. Thank you so much
really.
And so where can people contact you? Or also, I need to get a mention of the Building Biology Institute has experts all over the world that they're all, you know, trained like, I don't know, but as much as deep as your training, but they all are certified to be experts in walking you through making your home safe. So check out the Institute, or the Building Biology Institute, and also Larry's website. What's your website, Larry?
It's GustEnviro.com. Right. And by the way, the Institute, the Building Biology Institute, which is a nonprofit, would love to have your support. It has a lot of information for the public online to, you know, to continue your education about these electromagnetic radiations.
Excellent. Larry Gust, thank you so much for your time today. We'll look forward to learning more and look forward to, you know, your continued leadership and updates through the Building Biology Institute.
Josh, it's been my pleasure. Great getting together with you and doing this.
Thank you.
You're welcome, man.